This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
Come all, gather from near and from far, and let me spin you a yarn about an offseason in which literally nothing has happened yet. This is the Lookout Landing podcast. We talk about baseball, specifically Major League Baseball, with a focus on the Seattle Mariners. And we haven't recorded an episode in a while because I can speak for myself at least. We're kind of just waiting for something to happen. And nothing has happened. So if you wanted to hear people talk about Charlie Morton signing with the Braves, we're not going to do that. That does not qualify as something around here, although I'm sure the lovely people who cover the Braves will have something to say about that. But we're just going to talk about what might happen, what we hope will happen, what potentially will happen for the Seattle Mariners this winter. And to do that, I, Matthew Robertson, am gathered with Kate Prusser and John Troopin of LookoutLanding.com. How are y'all doing? How was the Thanksgiving in the pandemic situation for you?
Hello. I mean, you know, Thanksgiving's Thanksgiving. We always have a small one because small family. So didn't feel all that different. I'm pleased that there's no more. I was really worried that with, like, the second wave coming and the second wave of lockdowns, there was going to be shortages on stuff. But so far, that seems to be only the toilet paper still. I continue not to understand why people hoard toilet paper in the pandemic. Like, it's toilet. Like, take what you need. Don't take more than that. Take what you need. Come on, people.
Yeah, I've had that conversation a couple times, and it's basically what I've landed on in every one of these conversations is that people are assuming that the shits that they're taking at their office are now at home, right?
So that's maybe,
maybe five a week, which does not warrant buying three extra cases of toilet paper. Like, you don't need, you're not shitting more often because of a viral infection that you hopefully don't even have. You're just at home more often. So maybe people are just, like, going to the bathroom to pass the time, you know? Like, making shit, making, like, shitting an event sort of thing.
It is true that you want an excuse to get up from your desk as much as possible, and you don't have any kind of, like, social interaction, so, you know, the going to the bathroom becomes an event. But I think there's something more, like, I think it's just that became the thing that everyone got panicked about, and so everyone who has a lot of generalized anxiety about the pandemic, that is a thing to, like, feel control over, like, okay, well, I'm going to be okay because I have mountains and mountains of toilet paper. Like, it's a weird way to exercise control in a situation over which we have very little control. So yes, if you are one of the people who are hoard buying anything, be it flour, be it toilet paper, be it yeast, whatever has been kind of, mason jars are apparently super difficult to get. Yeah, just, like, examine your motivations as to why you feel that need, because I think it is a lot of, like, people trying to exert some degree of control over their lives, and, like, man, just go take a walk outside. That also feels like exerting control and is much better for everyone and everything.
Yeah. John, you want to weigh in on this? You have any thoughts?
And my day job involves trying to come up with creative ways to keep kids off of their screens but also entertained, so the lack of mason jars has actually been the most directly impactful experience for me, because mason jars are a great base component of a lot of sort of craft projects, so that has been a pain in the butt. Otherwise, you know, Thanksgiving was reasonably solid. We just took a walk and then put food in bags and everyone took it home and ate it, and you know, I love that. You know, it is my favorite holiday. You know, the conceit behind it, at least, is very, you know, is something I find very
It is your favorite holiday because it is socially acceptable to eat as much as you can and actually rewarded. So.
Yes. I receive commendations and actually get chastised. Praise. Yeah, I get chastised if I do not sort of gorge myself enough. So.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is the day for you to be a superstar.
Exactly.
Thanksgiving is the most dudes rock holiday that we have.
It is indeed.
It really celebrates just doing nothing, staying seated for like 8 hours, watching football, drinking, eating terrible food. It's the best. I also really love Thanksgiving and was able to somewhat salvage it. It felt weird, obviously, but still pleasant.
I will posit that for the exact opposite reasons, Thanksgiving is kind of the worst if you're on the other side of that gender gap, because Thanksgiving for me is a lot of stress. It's a lot of planning, preparing, cooking, cleaning, and basically I spend Friday just like flat asleep and just sleep through Friday because Thanksgiving is extremely stressful for me on all levels. So yeah, I'm here to represent the dudes don't rock side.
That's fair. I think we can handle it. You know, after all the dubs that men have taken over the years, I think we can handle one small L. I had a nice little movie weekend. I watched two very feel good, very very Caucasian movies. When Harry Met Sally and Easy A were my weekend treats. Both
was
good
this
movies,
a first
very
watch
watchable.
For either?
First watch of When Harry Met Sally, but not Easy A. Easy A came out like when I was in high school, so that was like very much in my wheelhouse. I just hadn't seen it in a while, and I saw that it was on Netflix. And it's short. I love a short movie, so I fired that up. When Harry Met Sally, though, this is not why we're here, obviously, but I think I could make the case, at least for movies that I've seen. I don't know, you know, I haven't seen every movie, but it is the whitest movie I have ever seen.
It is so white. Yeah, deeply white.
The only black person who has a speaking line is a waitress. Not great. And those little, like, you know, in-between scenes in that movie where they do the interviews with the married couples, one of those couples is Asian, and that's literally it. That's the only people of color in the entire movie.
You know, I don't like it when Harry Met Sally. Like, I've watched it, and I was expecting, maybe I had too high of expectations about it. I really like the whole friends too, will they, won't they, navigating that. But it left me so cold. Like, I did not feel any chemistry between those two actors. So.
I was the same way. I feel like, well, I mean, this is part of the movie, obviously, but the whole time I was sitting there, like, these people would hate each other. Like, there's no way that they would want to be near each other. Like, from the very beginning. Also, they meet several times. Very confusing during a first watch. Like, oh, they meet in college, and he's a huge dick, and then they just keep crossing paths, and he's still kind of a dick. And she's like, oh, well, maybe if nothing works out, I'll just fall back on Harry. It's a very weird movie. I feel like I had been conditioned to believe that it was like the gold standard of rom-coms.
Yeah.
So like you, Kate, I went in with high expectations. And then afterwards, I was like, that was just like a movie. Like, there's nothing great about it. The dialogue is pretty good. I think it's either Nancy Meyers or Nora Ephron.
I think it's Nora Ephron.
Yeah. So the writing is good. Like the dialogue between Harry and Sally is good. That's like the thing that I noticed. But then other than that, I did not love it.
Speaking of Nancy Meyers, though, I watched The Holiday was on Thanksgiving night after I was finished with all of my cook. They must have known the exact right time to put that on Lifetime because it came on right when I had finished like the last of the Thanksgiving dishes and was sitting down with the last of the Thanksgiving cocktail. And I mean, it's a Hallmark movie with, like, a big movie budget and better acting and better writing, but I thoroughly enjoyed. That is a way more romantic to me movie than When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
If we were drafting rom-coms, which we might come to that as this off-season drags on and on and on with nothing happening. I'm really concerned about what our show fodder is going to be in, like, mid-December.
Yeah, I've been thinking the same thing. There's only so many ways to fill an hour when we have to, like, kind of try to stay on the Mariners track. Like, we're already 10 minutes in. I haven't mentioned the Mariners at all, but I feel like if we were to drag this on for a whole hour, people would start to figure out the ruse here. Like, we're trying to do as little actual baseball conversation as possible. But I should mention, today, the day we are recording this is November 29th, 2020, 2 years to the date that one Jeff Passan told the world via Twitter that there is, quote, significant momentum toward a deal that would send Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz from the Seattle Mariners to the New York Mets. A deal which did happen, obviously, and you could say, I don't think it's hyperbole to say, changed the entire trajectory of the Seattle Mariners franchise.
Yep.
Fair. Definitely fair.
So it's happy anniversary to all who celebrate. 2 years to the day, which, you know, I feel like this year the big thing has been like, oh, what is time? I have no concept of time. But 2 years feels exactly right for that. Like, that is nice and grounding, you know? I'm like, okay, that still makes sense to me. It was 2 years ago that the Mariners started to tear everything down. I don't know about you guys, but that feels like exactly the correct amount of time.
I feel like Mets fans would say that it would feel like that had happened yesterday, because they are still... Poor Jared Kelnick should have a way to block all, like, anyone with, like, Mets in their screen name.
See, but time out. We know Jared well. We monitor his online behavior. He does this yes, on purpose. Do. He loves it. He loves it. So
I think
much.
He does. I think yeah, he probably does.
It is. I think he could not have imagined a much better way for things to go of just, like, Jared needed some people who, like, Jared, I think, needed to be viewed as sort of a villain by some people. I think this is actually a very useful component for him.
I think for somebody who was a little overlooked in his draft class, I always felt like, even though I thought he was one of the more premier talents in that draft class from the high school side, he didn't get some of the same acclaim as some of the other guys. And I felt like he was either by how he positioned himself or like how the media talked about him, a little bit of an outsider in that group. He was a little small. I mean, he doesn't look so much like the same physical specimen as like a Nolan Gorman or something. So I think that now he's got two fan bases instead of just one, and feeling like he definitely came out of the deal better. And yeah, I mean, everyone wants to hear about how their exes are not over them, so I'm sure that feeds Jared's ego pretty well, right?
100%. I feel like he definitely has studied at the like white athlete school of like, give yourself an edge. You know, like, he doesn't really have any like huge obstacle he's had to overcome in his life. So he's sort of, I think he's made this trade into like his Joker origin story.
No, absolutely. No, I mean, right down to his new like branding logo, where it's like, it basically is like, I'm the Joker, like JK kind of thing. I mean, yeah, the Mets, nobody believed in him, which means almost everyone believed in him, but the Mets believed in Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz enough, and that's equivalent, I think. And we hopefully, as Mariners fans, are going to be grateful for that manufactured chip on his shoulder.
Oh, I think he added to that chip this summer as well, with like not being called up and fueling some frustration. I don't even know if that was like legitimate frustration or, again, just like some kind of kindling that he needed to use as fuel to get through what was admittedly a really challenging year for self-motivation, especially if you knew, like, he knew he wasn't getting called up, but he had to make himself feel like he deserved to be called up and was left out. And again, yeah, it's just that kind of furthering of your own self-mythology, which I think, as Matthew accurately points out, is what a rich white kid from Wisconsin, who has been the best player on his baseball team for his entire life, who played for Team USA, that's what he needs to do in order to develop some kind of an edge, as you say.
Right. Nobody believed in him except for Team USA and an MLB team in a major media market who drafted him in the first round, and then another MLB team that specifically sought him out in a trade.
And other a bunch of prospect writers and a bunch of fans and prospect hounds and... Yeah.
Nobody.
nobody believed in me, except everyone did.
Oh, man. So I guess that also, though, we should mention, on a somber note, I think, that Robinson Cano, the man who was part of the trade that got us Jared Kelnick, has been suspended again by Major League Baseball for a drug-related offense. Kind of a bummer, I would
say. It's the stanozololololol. It's the, like, serious one. This is not a masking agent. This is, like, a straight-up dude who's taking steroids.
Straight-up steroids in his body, which,
like, this is the big, bad East German swim team kind of steroid.
Yeah, this is the, I'm 37 years old, I gotta ramp up this dosage. I gotta really make sure that I get these last couple counting stats before getting to the Hall of Fame, which now, of course, is out the window completely. But I think that was part of the motivation here. And also, like, I think Robbie has sort of seen the writing on the wall and, like, knew that, like, steroids or not, that, like, he was on his way out. Like, obviously getting traded in a deal that brings one team, like, young hope and talent is, like, a surefire sign that you're becoming a little bit washed. Like, they wanted to offload him and his contract to get younger and better. And then now I think he's maybe overcompensating a little bit and trying to do hella steroids. I don't know. Obviously, that might be unfair. But I was upset in, like, a, oh, my God, like, we're going to have this conversation again sort of way. Not upset at him necessarily because he's also not our problem anymore. That's kind of the beauty of Brody Van Wagenen and this whole Mets trade. So thank you, Brody, as always.
If only Brody had accepted your LinkedIn request, I feel like things would have taken such a different turn.
It's like
the curse of the sea witch.
I sent him because the first time I tried to add Brody Van Wagenen on LinkedIn, I didn't say anything. I just sent him like a standard request. He ignored it. So then I kept sending more with like the little personalized note. And I think on one of them I was like, hey Brody, I have some really good baseball ideas. And he ignored that one too. And had he accepted that one, then I would have had an in to like talk shop with him and be like, hey Brody, let's figure out your roster here. But he didn't want any part of that, unfortunately. And now he's left with a crumbling roster and egg on his face and no job. So who won in the end, Brody? Me. Also, if you want to come on the podcast, we will have you.
Keep that winning streak going. Come on the pod.
Exactly. This is your time to, I feel like, you know, the trend in media right now is like, oh, I want to control the narrative. You know, you hear that all the time. I want my own platform to give my side of the story. There's no better chance to do that than on the Lookout Landing podcast, disgraced former Mets general manager, Brody Van Wagenen.
Also a good chance to reverse the what we call the Matthew jinx. So
it's a great point. Yeah, that is a really good point, Brody. Ball's in your court. But what was your initial reaction when you saw that Cano had been suspended again? Because it kind of came out of nowhere, too, like dead of the offseason. I personally had not been thinking about Robinson Cano in a while, and then that news comes across and sort of flips that completely.
Yeah, they supposedly weren't even testing. So, I mean, I guess if you get popped before, they make sure to put you on the testing list, and for a good reason, I guess. Yeah, I was mostly just disappointed, like, I've always rooted for Robbie. I believe that no one loves baseball the way that he loves baseball. And I think that he's somewhat of a tragic hero figure in that he made choices that he thought were good, for preserving his legacy, but they ultimately wound up sacrificing his legacy. And, you know, it's very sad to me. It's a lesson in not letting something become so important to you that it closes out your value system.
Yeah, there have been few players who I think increased my enjoyment of watching the Mariners the same way that, you know, Cano did in the time that he was here. And it's a real, I remember how it felt the day that he got suspended the first time. Kate, you know, you and I were talking about this, like,
oh, I remember exactly where I was. I was sitting on my bed when I saw, I had to sit down, like, when I saw the first kind of wave, and I was like, oh no, this guy seems pretty credible. It's one report, but this guy seems to be pretty credible. Oh no. Mm. And I just remember sitting there and feeling it, like it got punched in the stomach.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not, I would say, a hardliner on steroids, like, especially going back in time, you know, like, when we talk about Hall of Fame stuff, but, like, it is pretty clearly and well understood against the rules, and, you know, like, it's not, I mean, it's cheating in baseball. It's not like, you know, there are worse things that someone can do than cheating at baseball, but like it is cheating at baseball. And you know, I think I get frustrated because it is like, there's so many things that happen in Major League Baseball that are against the rules that are not enforced. Like, you know, pine tar use, you know, underage scouting and contracts, like, so, you know, plenty, not that those are equivalent, but like there are tons and tons of things that MLB has rules about that they don't enforce, and that they do enforce this one, but then, you know, don't really bother with others. Like, I don't know. I think there should be, I am very disappointed. I'm not really a big fan of him at this point, but, yeah, I don't know. It just, I guess I'm really, really glad that we didn't have to watch this slow decline, slow series of things happen to him on the Mariners. Not just because of how good the return was, but because of just how grim that this, you know, the discussion would be around the contract and the signing and how it all didn't work out and how the team wouldn't have made the playoffs the last couple of years anyway, probably. So I'm glad that that potential timeline is averted, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say, like, it won't affect my memories of him on the Mariners at all, like, because that's in the past. Like, those are already saved to my mental hard drive, you know? I think that...
It's also convenient that he's, like, he's appended to Nelson Cruz in a lot of the... who is an angel, a perfect angel. Himself a steroid...
that's what I was going to say. That's,
I guess you could say.
It's so funny how people can just decide to, like, look past it for some people, and then for others, they're like, oh, well, I hate him, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like D. Gordon. Like, I mean, like, the Mariners have had some of the literal men of the year, you know, on their team who, like, they did a baseball cheating, you know, like, which is bad. And you know, but it is not necessarily keep you from being able to be a human being worth rooting for, especially if you're contrite and you are, you know, you take the, put in the effort to make amends, which I think you saw from D., certainly, and you saw from Nelson Cruz.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, but Cano did it too. He had the RC22 Foundation, which then his big gala had to be canceled the year he got popped for steroids. So that, I mean, just that is pretty damaging to the legacy, and I think you can't rehabilitate that image if, especially on the second time around. It's just two different paths. And I think Nelson Cruz chose a really good path, like made a mistake, repented, went about building his body the right way, committed himself to this regime that has kept him healthy, but also, you know, knew when to exit the playing field. And it was a struggle for him too. He did not like DHing, but he taught himself to do it. And, you know, he made sacrifices and was a person of character. I think baseball a lot of times gives us these tests of character. Like, I was reading Colin McHugh is one of my off-season targets. When we get around to talking about that, I would really like Colin McHugh if he's available for a reasonable price. But he was talking about the Astros cheating scandal, and he was like, yeah, you think you're going to do the right thing, and you want to do the right thing, and then it was a failure of bravery. It was, we weren't brave, we didn't do the right thing, and you want to believe you will, but do you when it comes down to the line? And I think we see that a lot with people choosing to, and people will choose to do the wrong thing, and it's how you respond to that, I think, that is as much a measure of your character as whether you made the right choice in the first place.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yep. So while we're on the subject, sort of, Kate, you had a nice little entry point here. The whole reason why we're recording this episode is to try and figure out what the Mariners are doing. Obviously, they haven't had any tangible actions yet. I'm sure there's a lot of internal discussions going on. But we've basically turned this episode over to the listeners. You guys sent a bunch of great questions, which we're always grateful for. So we'll try to hit some of the relevant ones regarding off-season plans. But I think the first one, the logical one to start this off, comes from Anthony Peck, who just simply wrote, "What does a successful off-season look like for you?" I like this is intentionally vague. We can go a bunch of different directions here. For me, it's pretty simple. I'm not going to get like into specifics or like actual moves they could make just for the sake of brevity, but I just want to see them try, like spend money, go for it, take a risk, you know, do something. And I think there is, you know, there's obviously has to be some caution because you don't want to make the future worse for one decent year kind of thing. But there's no reason, I think, not to at least make one swing this offseason. Because guess what? If it doesn't work, you can come back again and try again next offseason. There is no salary cap. The Mariners are very rich, just like every other team. Like, don't do anything drastic, you know, maybe not. I wouldn't love to see a $100 million contract, but I would maybe like to see a bunch of individual deals that add up to equal something close to that. You know what I mean? So I just want to see them make at least a little bit of effort rather than just sit on their thumbs and cry poor until next offseason.
I agree. I think the big things are just putting the young core in a position to make a playoff run. Like that is very much doable with the sort of stipulations you lined out, and doesn't require, you know, committing yourself one way or the other on a lot of players. But like, there is enough, you know, if you have the young core and you have decent players around them and the young guys don't take a step forward, you know, then that is what it is. But being in a situation where, you know, J.P. Crawford's playing well, Kyle Lewis is playing well, Justice Sheffield's playing well, Evan White's improved. You know, you have Jared Kelnick up at midseason or, you know, even sooner, ideally. And the team is, you know, kind of hanging, but it's being let down because they're having to play Tim Lopes a bunch. They're having to play, you know, start, you know, the seventh or eighth starting pitchers. They have a bad bullpen because it's a bunch of, you know, waiver pickups. That would be a disappointment because that would be, we're just doing 2020 again. And I think to progress, you need to fill in that, you know, that almost intentional gap that they left last year.
Yeah, I think a successful offseason means you've taken a step forward. It's not just waiver wire pile of arms in the bullpen, and they've basically said, like, that's basically the only thing they've committed to do is to overhaul the bullpen, which makes me a little nervous because the track record, a little spotty. Nicasio, Zepchinski, I mean, C-Sheck was okay. I'm biased because I had to recap the game where we lost on a walk-off wild pitch from Steve Cishek, so that has always kind of colored my perception of that signing. But, you know, he hung around and was decent for a while, but it's just been so much churn, and bullpens are, I know, probably the most difficult thing to build. You do not know. They're like a black box. Like, you do not know whether they're going to work until you actually get them out there. So yeah, I'm nervous about that. I feel confident they will work on upgrading that. I want another bat. I mean, maybe Ty France is your guy and that's great and everything. I'm not super sold on Ty France.
No, me neither. Not on an everyday, like, for DH of a team that's trying to compete, you're going to want a little more production than Ty France, I think.
I don't know what they're thinking, where they're thinking they're going to play him. I don't know who's going to play third base in the future if Kyle Seager isn't there. Like, I am pretty nervous about the batting average of the batting abilities of the infield, because Evan White, I believe in him, he will figure it out, but what a rough, rough year. And I mean, he didn't get a chance to face triple. This was his triple A year, but in a much harder sense. So that, I mean, J.P. Crawford's bat, I feel like, is very much a, I want some kind of a steadying offensive force. And that's been Kyle Seager, but it can't be forever. So I'm worried that the Angels are going to get Colton Wong. And that's going to be, so yeah, I would like to see a player of that caliber, somebody who is a steady bat, to kind of hold down, because the outfield, I believe that Mitch Haniger is going to have a big bounce back year. Like, I'm almost penciling him in as a free agent kind of signing, because he's going to bring some offensive production that has been missing from the lineup back to it. So yeah. I feel good about that, but I'm real worried about the infield's consistency offensively. Defensively, they're great. Offensively, I have concerns.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. The potential to have one above average offensive player in the infield is pretty high. One average offensive player in the infield is reasonably high. You know, I mean, Dylan Moore has to show he can sustain what he can do, or Ty France or Shed Long have to be able to stick or find a way to, you know, keep it going. And like, all three of those guys have question marks. Evan White, question marks. JP Crawford still hasn't hit for any power. I think might have slugged less than he OBP'd, or reasonably close. Like, that is not a super encouraging crew there. I would absolutely love to see them, not that Colton Wong is an offensive stalwart, but make a move of some sort there, or go, you know, find one of the younger pitching options out there who have shown some sort of high level talent and get them onto a sort of multi-year option kind of deal. Because I think there are a few guys out there, obviously James Paxton, but you also have, you know, Chris Archer. You've got a number of different pitchers.
Taiwan,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, a good place to talk about Colin McHugh as well, who yeah. I think if he's fully healed is not somebody you would put on a long-term contract because of his age. Mm-hmm. And I think there are other teams that would be ahead of us in the pecking order, but that's somebody who can come out of the bullpen. He can make spot starts for you. You can kind of bring him along as you're developing Justin Dunn, hopefully in Tacoma. So,
yeah, I mean, even if it's, you know, you could even go Corey Kluber or Garrett Richards. Like, there are a lot of pitchers out there where it's like, you have the components of being an ace, or you have been, you know, or a high level starter, and you've been that before, or you have shown that you could be that in stretches. And the Mariners can afford to make those signings, not out of a 2017 kind of situation where it's like, we're hoping, and this is plan A, and there's not really a plan B or C other than Andrew Albers.
Legend.
Yeah, because, you know, worst case, you know, if you're in May or June and you've got Nick Margavichis and LJ Newsome in the rotation, no, that's not good, but those are interesting young players who, with the opportunity, could show that they could be starting pitchers or some sort of big league pitcher. And that is a lot better than, you know, the pitching depth is so much better than where it has been, and so much more promising than where it has
been.
There
are no Tommy Malones in that we expect to see in the big league rotation this year. And that, I think, is, this might be a first for that. I guess maybe last year, if you count that, just letting the young guys have run. And those were painful pitching performances to watch. But watching LJ Newsome or Justin Dunn struggle is very different to me from watching Tommy Malone or, oh God, Giovanni.
Nate Carnes, anyone?
Of these, like, retreads.
Absolutely.
Gallardo, that was his last name.
Yes. No, I think that's, I think you're hitting on it exactly. Yeah. Where it is.
Ariel Miranda, bless his soul, CPBL legend, but extremely painful to watch pitch.
You're hitting on it exactly. You're just trying to fill out a roster with competency so that, you know, if the competency falls through, you're putting out youth as opposed to you're putting out you know, whoever you can whip through on waivers. But you want to give this roster a chance to succeed at its best so that if it falls through, you're still getting development. You're still seeing, giving chances for progress. And, you know, it doesn't have to all come together this year. But making a roster that it could come all come together this year, that's what we're looking for.
Right. I think the Mariners should sign Kevin Millwood.
Yes. He's around. I'm sure he's around.
He's got to be around. Part of a no-hitter. That's not nothing, folks. Go watch the YouTube clips. We touched on a couple questions in that little section. I want to shout out John Edwards, who asked, what are the odds of free agent reunions with James Paxton and or Taiwan Walker? I'd say it's very high, if not assumed already, that Taiwan Walker will be on the Mariners. Yeah.
I think Taiwan Walker might show up whether he signs with the team or not. Yeah. Like, he's just show up in Peoria.
He's going to do the thing that J.R. Smith does with LeBron, where he's like, I'm on your team, right? Like, I just follow you wherever you go.
Yeah.
But I think a better question might be, what sort of deals would you give to those guys? I feel like Taiwan pitched well enough to, like, earn himself, like, a fairly, like, a three-year deal worth, like, a good little chunk of change. Paxton is a little more interesting to me because there's still just that huge uncertainty over everything that he does, you know?
Yeah, so, both of them are in a tough, both of them are in that bracket down from the top tier. Taiwan, I think, is higher than Paxton just because of health.
Which is a wild thing to say about a guy who basically missed 2 years with and then made ten starts.
Yeah, but I mean, and Taiwan's velocity was not what it was, but it returned somewhat. And, you know, you can see that there's a progression there. And other than just the injury, he wasn't a very injured player coming up through the minors. Paxton, just his body, it's like the Mitch Haniger thing. Like, it's just been... Remember when he injured himself doing push-ups at training camp? Like, he tore his thumb ligament or whatever it was. I mean, it's just, it's been like Mitch, like a bizarre series of injuries. So I think, unfortunately, I don't think the Mariners will spend like we want them to spend because they're going to cry poor like every other MLB team. And I think Taiwan is going to be out of their reach financially, even if he wants to come back. Like, he's not going to give him a hometown discount or anything. So I could see, after the top pitching free agents go off the board, Taiwan becoming more in demand and his price tag going past what the Mariners are willing to pay and past the amount of time that they're willing to extend him, because they don't, you know, they've got that crew coming, they don't need him for very long. So I feel like a Paxton reunion is more likely, just because he still has ties to the area just as much, and he's friends on the team. Well, he and Taiwan are actually still really good friends. He's still got ties to the area. I think he's still got a house here, you know, obviously from British Columbia. But I just feel like he had a rough time in the New York media spotlight and might be happy to come back. And also, like, his brand now, and we talked about this with Austin Einhorn on the podcast, who's Mitch's trainer, which you should go listen to that podcast if you haven't yet. It was very interesting. It's very hard once you're branded an injury-prone player, and I think that's definitely the label that Paxton's carrying around.
I find it
quite unfortunate.
I find it very interesting that you think sort of the Paxton return is more likely than the Taiwan return. I don't know that you're wrong necessarily, but I mean,
I would put pretty small odds on both of them. I think we're going to get someone super boring who I don't like at all, like Brett Anderson or something, but I honestly think that.
No, well, here's what I'll say. I think a Brett Anderson signing is very likely, regardless of the other outcomes. I think he makes a ton of sense, but could not be much less interesting. I do think Taiwan does fit weirdly in this free agent class because of how many sort of decent but not ace level arms there are, and Ty, just like, the main thing he has going for him is he's the youngest starter out there by a good chunk. You know, he's 28 still, everyone else is, you know, of a quality is at least 31, and most of them are 32, 33, pretty much. So I think other, you know, Taiwan, I think, could come back on like a 3-year, 20 to 25 million deal, because he just hasn't had, you know, he hasn't been that good. Like, he's had good stretches, but he's just never has put it all together. And even this past year, you know, he was sort of decent, but he didn't ultimately have, you know, great peripherals. And, you know, I think there's a lot to look at and wonder about him. I mean, he had a 243 BABIP. Like, that is, you know, do you think that's really who he is? I don't know. And for Paxton, I mean, his mile per hour were down 3 miles per hour from his normal. Like, it really is going to be tough to see if he's healthy. But I do think the Mariners could absolutely fit him in with their six guy rotation, and I think that's an appealing fit. So I think Taiwan, I would not put it high odds, just because any free agent signing specifically is tough, but I think he's a good bet for them to be in on. Paxton, I think if it's late in the game and no one signed him, then it could be maybe an Iwakuma kind of thing where it's like, surprise, we brought Paxton back.
Yeah, I think you're both right, which is a cop-out, but I wouldn't be surprised either way. I'd be shocked if they got both, I'll say that, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if the Mariners kind of, like, rewarded Taiwan Walker for putting together a good season coming back from injury during a pandemic and being like, hey, we'll give you, like, a pretty good deal just because we like you and you clearly like us. But also, I think if we wait until, like, a month before the actual regular season starts and James Paxton is still out there, like, yeah, the Mariners should give him a 1-year deal. Why not? You know, like, I think that the risks here are pretty low if you do short deals, because, like you said, we have so much reinforcement coming. And I think that the Mariners understand that, like, the fans want to see these things. Whether they actually act on that is a whole other thing, but they definitely know that they could curry a little bit of favor by signing either of these guys. So that's definitely something I will be monitoring. But I think they're gonna, if anything, they're gonna do Taiwan plus another sort of blah sort of deal for, like, a Brett Anderson type or, like, a middle reliever who can swing to the rotation if something bad happens. That's, like, realistic, but I would love to see them go for something a little bit above that. I just don't think that the Mariners have any interest in doing that whatsoever.
Yeah, I think something that should be considered is, like, the Mariners definitely think about how to put butts in seats. They have to, right? Like, there's a reason we've had a Japanese player on the team for every year since Ichiro. It's because they curry that audience and they want to maintain it. So, you know, I don't think that's a super cynical way of looking at things. That's just business, baby. So facing some significant losses and needing to put butts in seats with a team that is not really in contention yet, I think a signing like Paxton, who's a huge fan favorite, you know, you resurrect the Maple Grove, you have, like, a built-in fan section there. Or Taiwan, again, huge fan favorite, interacts with people on Twitter. Like, those are guys who will specifically put butts in seats for the Mariners in a way Brett Anderson just will not. So, like, you can slow play it and hope that Brett Anderson makes the team better enough that people will come out and see them and be invested in all the other young kids. Or you can kind of pay a little bit of a premium to get one of these hometown connected guys and know that you'll have, like, kind of a built-in fan base for them from day one. So it's just different strategies, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them go that way.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I think that, Kate, I think we've held John's leash for a little too long here. We should finally let him go and ask him about Mitch Haniger. We have a question about it, too. So it's really, everything's coming up John right now. Garbage Sprite on Twitter, loyal listener, big fan. Hello, Garbage Sprite. They said, Did you see Mitch Haniger's Insta thingy where he was taking a swing? Obviously, I know you saw it, John. So yes. I want the full breakdown. Maybe if someone hasn't seen the video he posted, explain it to them. And then also,
I tweeted it like midnight last night, and people are so hungry for baseball. I was like, this is too late, but I needed to tweet it so I could put it in the links, which I was doing at midnight last night. So I tweeted it not expecting any kind of engagement because I just needed to have it. It's a painful process, but in order to transfer an Instagram stories video, I have to screen capture it on my phone and then tweet it off my phone, and then I can put it in the links. Very annoying, very inside lookout landing here. But it got like 3,000 views of the video at like 100 likes at midnight last night. So that's how hungry people are for either A, baseball content, Mariners related, or B, Mitch Haniger content. Maybe C, both.
I was going to say, I forget quite often that he's even still on the team. So that's why I think for me, it was like, oh my God, like not only is Mitch Haniger part of my life again, but he looks amazing as you can look in a batting cage by yourself.
I know, a fuzzy video, but he looks yoked. He looks good.
It is the equivalent of when basketball players post videos of themselves in an empty gym guarded by no one, like hitting a bunch of uncontested shots. And you're like, oh my God, he looks great. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Any NBA player should be able to do that.
I forgot, though, Mitch Haniger has an aesthetically pleasing swing. It is level. It is balanced. It is gorgeous. I mean, it is one of my favorites.
Shouts to Mitch for good framing, good directorial vision.
Hey, that might have been someone that I wonder who was holding the camera. That could have been his wife. Like, who knows? Oh, speaking of his wife, there's a little baby Haniger coming who I think was supposed to come in November at some point. So congratulations possibly to new Papa Mitch Haniger. Yeah.
I think Haniger's swing, Kate, you know, it should be on like one of those like satisfying things compilations where it's like Robinson Cano has a beautiful swing, like Ken Griffey Jr. had a beautiful swing. I don't find Mitch Haniger's swing beautiful, but it is very like, ah yes, this is a thing working exactly as it's meant to be, like
and that's not beautiful to you?
I think it's just slightly different.
I think that's beautiful.
It's more workmanlike for me. Like, to me, I see like a nice, well-running automobile as opposed to like the sports car that Cano or Griffey was.
I think this is lefty bias, and I mean, I do love a lefty swing. It's not a home run swing either. It doesn't have that loft, but yeah, fine. If Griffey and Cano and all of them are fancy sports cars, Mitch is like a beautifully maintained 1998 Subaru Impreza.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, I will say, I'm trying to think of like a beautiful righty swing. I think Manny Ramirez had a beautiful right-handed swing, to try and balance out our sort of...
You know who has a beautiful right-handed swing?
Who's that?
One Julio Rodriguez.
That's true.
Julio!
That's
true.
Well, you know what? I actually think Edgar also had a beautiful right-hand swing where it was graceful. Like, Mitch Haniger's not graceful. Mitch Haniger is like, it looks, I mean, it looks very like everything has lined up correctly, like all these gears in the little, like it's like looking inside a watch. It's like, oh, this is really cool, but I don't know. Anyway, it is encouraging to see him swinging a bat full effort, probably at a 55 mile per hour pitch, but you know, who knows. I am extremely encouraged. Like Kate, I am optimistic about Haniger. It was certainly helpful talking last week with his trainer, but at the same time, like, Haniger's really good, and it does feel like, hey, did he actually exist? Does he actually exist? It hasn't felt like it for a long time, but
I'm giving John a run this year for biggest Mitch Haniger fan, Hanistan. Wow. Yeah, I'm coming for that crown this year.
I wore my Haniger jersey today while I was out doing errands, and I have a Hanimal t-shirt that is in the wash, so you're going to have to step up your merch game, is all I'm saying on that.
I'm wearing tie-dye, which I think helped because I was watching Tom Brady get his ass kicked. I felt like those things were combined. I feel like Tom Brady has like a very moral obligation to tie-dye.
So and you think he's plus pro tie-dye or anti-tie-dye?
No, I think he's very anti-tie-dye, I wanted him to lose, so I put this shirt on and then watched him lose. It was great.
I don't want to cross the streams here, but this does sound like a tweet for a certain account.
It is like if Bill Walton is the anti-Tom Brady, then all of that tracks, which I'm going to have to do some research into this, but yeah, absolutely. I could see that.
I think Tom Brady thinks that if you smoke weed, you like have like a manic episode no matter what. I think he thinks weed is crack. So I don't think he has any interest in wearing tie-dye or anything that's like weed adjacent. I think he hates it a lot. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes probably doesn't smoke weed, but I bet he wears tie-dye.
Yeah.
And he beat Tom Brady handily. So anyway, this is not a football podcast. Just a look into Matthew's little Sunday watching Tom Brady lose. Very fun for me personally. We can finally, we'll end this podcast with some armchair GM kind of stuff. This is another one that's sort of teed up for John and probably for Kate. Definitely not for me. Brandon Keba on Twitter said, any potential fits from the KBO or MPB markets? Names that stand out, Ha-Sung Kim, who we've talked about and John has written about, but also Mel Rojas Jr. and Tomoyuki Sugano, who I don't know anything about.
This is a John-only question.
I love a question that's genuinely a question. Like, I don't know the answer, so I'm asking any potential fits from the KBO or NPB markets. I will say from the little that I've done, the research that I've put in, I think Kim is a pretty good fit for the Mariners, and I know who Mel Rojas Jr. is because he's like a non-Asian player who dominates in Asia. I don't know anything about Sugano, so John, the floor is yours.
Well, I can start with Rojas. Rojas has a great deal of similarity, I would say, with Eric Thames, in that he's a sort of quad A guy. He actually never got called up in the bigs and went over, has just been one of the preeminent sluggers over there. He's 30. He is coming off of what is almost certainly going to be the KBO MVP season, 47 dingers, like 349, 417, 680 line. I mean, just really immense power hitter. He plays outfield there, but he's definitely limited defensively. I think you could sign him, but I also he was a third round pick in 2010. You know, people have thought he was going to be good, and he has hit well, but he would be sort of like one of many options if you're looking for a way to fill the like left field gap for a little bit. And I don't know that he's the most interesting one. Sugano is the more interesting fit. He has been an ace in the MPB for quite a while, and like an ace, like a mate, like multiple years of sub two ERAs, as a, you know, 180 inning guy each year. He's played for the Yomiuri Giants, who have not historically posted as many players. And they've been very successful and have had the clout to hold on to their players. But Sugano is going to be 31, has like a low 90s fastball, good arsenal, absolutely could be a fit for the Mariners if they so chose. I don't know. He's not like better than, he's not the top pitcher on the market now, but I think he would absolutely fit in like that second tier with like Masahiro Tanaka and like with like what would have been Kevin Gausman and Marcus Stroman. I think he's sort of in that tier, so I think there will be a lot of interest. I don't know if he fits what the Mariners are going to be willing to spend on budget, but
is he young? Sorry to interrupt.
31.
How old is
31
this guy?
So not, oh, okay, not old for like a starting pitcher to hit free agency, but he's not like, he's not, you know, he's 4 years older than you say Kikuchi was when he came right. over. Tanaka was
old for
25.
A pitcher, young for an adult.
Yeah, exactly. So very much someone interesting. I think there will be enough of a market and a lack of alternatives at the top of the market that I don't think he's the top pick for the Mariners, but could be, and not disinteresting. There was one other potential person going to be posted, and I am trying to find who it was. I believe it was the top pitcher in or another top pitcher in KBO, but I am...
While you do that, John, I just want to quickly say, we got a question from Andrew Cunningham at jru_ku. I don't know how to say it, sorry. What FA/non-tenders would make the M's reconsider making Dylan Moore the everyday second baseman next year, which, first of all, I'm not so sure he's the everyday... I think second base is going to be something that there is... some flexibility with between Ty France, Dylan Moore, Shed Long if he's up and healthy. But I think that that is where Kim, is it Kim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Could fit. That's where Kim could fit in, is if the Mariners were going to tender him a contract. I think that that could make that an interest. I don't feel like that position is settled, so that's something yeah. to kind of monitor.
I agree. Those are, like, to give, like, name, I said earlier, like, I want them to take a swing. If you want me to, like, attach names to that, like, what does that look like? For me, it starts with Kim. Like, take a chance on him. He's young. He can play second base. And then if Seager dips, he can play third base. And also, I would love to see them do a short deal for Michael Brantley to come in and be the DH/adult in the room. But Kim, much more so than Brantley.
I think Brantley is being really hotly pursued by the Blue Jays, and I think is... Well,
tell the Blue Jays to fuck off.
I think Brantley is out of their pay grade. Like, the Astros would like to re-sign him, but the Blue Jays really want him, so... and that's a team that needs outfield help more than they need anything. Like, they've got a really solid offensive infield. They need some pitching. I think they would love to have Taiwan back, even though they misused him in the playoffs. But, yeah, they are really just missing that. First of all, veteran presence. Anyway, I'm gonna let the Blue Jays overpay for Michael Brantley.
This is Kate angling for a Canadian passport, which I get. I understand what you're doing here, Kate. You're trying to find a Canadian person who will take you under their wing, let you into the country as America falls into whatever is happening.
All right, look, first of all, I already set that up, like, way back in... I have gotten my get out of America free jail card, and that is the mother of Lewis Boyd, who is our drafty / podcast guest / Mariners yeah. prospect turned Mariners coach, who's younger than some of the players he was coaching. Anyway, he has a fantastic mom named Kathy, who has already assured me that that I can be part of her expatriation / repatriation project. So I'm covered. I'm covered. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's Vancouver area.
Well, hello to the Boyd family. Yes. My name is Matthew.
No. That's my space. I have reserved that spot on the floor. Go find your own friendly Canadians.
Actually, I'd be happy to be like a live-in housekeeper for the Paxtons. They seem like a really chill hang.
Oh, absolutely. Him and except Katie Jones. Matthew, yeah. Last I checked, you do not cook nor clean.
I clean.
Okay.
I clean.
You definitely
I'll clean
don't,
before I cook.
Do
yeah,
not cook,
absolutely.
Though, yeah.
That's fair. That's
Maybe
fair.
They could take both clean. Of us, because I cook. I'm not very good at clean.
I'm seeing more of like cook. a production assistant. Like, I just handle all of their tasks. Like, I'll go to the grocery store for them. You know, I'll make sure that if they want to go shopping, I can do that for them. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well,
So In the interim, I have uncovered.
Good vamping, Matthew. High five.
So there's not a particularly notable KBO pitcher coming out this year. However, another solid pitcher out of the NPB is Kohei Arihara, who has been on the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, who
also known as Shohei Ohtani's old team.
Yes, indeed. And has less of a track record than Sugano, who has been the leader of their national team. There's actually, I believe, Sugano pitched in the joint no-hitter that the Japan national team threw against the MLB All-Stars several years back, which was in Japan, and was a real trip. I believe that was in 2014. Anyway, Arihara's going to be 28 this year. Has low 90s fastball, throws a lot of pitches, not necessarily quite as prominent of a strikeout pitcher, less blow away kind of stuff, but could easily be like a number four starter on the right team. So he actually is someone who I think the Mariners could definitely look at, bringing in a 28-year-old decent starting pitcher who gets a lot of contact. Absolutely is up their alley considering how good their defense is, and he would be, I think, a less costly option. So that's someone to watch. They are notably Tetsudo Yamada, who is kind of the every year everyone or people check, is Tetsudo Yamada being posted?
He is not being posted. That name.
Yeah, one of the best second basemen in potentially in the world. He's been a really extraordinary hitter, 30-30, just several years in a row. This year, with a shortened season, he did not get there, but previously had been just basically in the 30-30 range since he turned 21 in 2014. He's quite something, but no, not going to be posted, unfortunately. Sticking with the Yakult Swallows, so he may or may not ever come over, and it's a bummer because this actually would be the year where it would make a ton of sense for the Mariners to try and push for him, but it is what it is.
Well, it looks like I will have to play for the Yakult Swallows, just in case. If they need an insurance policy, if they decide to let him go, yes, I am available. I will play second base, one of the positions that I did actually play in my youth. So hit me up, Yakult. I've mostly just been hanging out all year. I mean, decent shape, can field a ground ball. No guarantees on my hitting, but more just for me. I want to prove to myself that I can still do it, that sort of thing. Anyway, let's end with, this is kind of an interesting subject because we got a lot of classic, I get it. I understand why everyone does this. A lot of classic fake trades. What if, what does this get us? If we package these guys together, what can we get? Specifically one I was asking about, Braden Bishop and Justin Dunn could get you what? And to answer the question, I feel like that's not more than a back end starting pitcher. But this is the type of deal I'd be more interested in next season, next offseason anyway. When we have a better idea of how the Mariners look over a full 162-game season, then we can try to figure out what they need to supplement that. But I would also just want to caution all of our listeners and all Mariner fans in general about falling into the trap of trading for the sake of trading. I feel like Jerry DePoto is partially responsible for this as well, just because the man loves a trade. It's fun. It's the easy thing to do from home because most fans have a pretty clear idea of what pieces are expendable and what pieces that Mariners need. But let's not spend the entire winter doing the what if we do this player from the major league roster plus this kid from AA? Does that get us Chris Bryant? I don't fucking know the answer. I really don't. It's
baseball trade values has got you on that, although I think some of their valuations are a little wild.
Right.
But so go play with that.
To satisfy this crowd, I do understand. I think if you're gonna start any of those, let's try to trade some of the prospects, Justin Dunn makes sense. I want to see what he's got. Like, I feel like they have more time to just let him pitch and figure it out now. Like, we don't need to trade Justin Dunn right now just for the sake of trading.
Like, I want to say a couple things. Like, first of all, I think people are expecting DePoto, like, he's made this name for himself as, like, Mr. Trade, Trader Jerry, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I really think that if you look at the pace of trades that he's made, it has slowed. Like, as the ball club has started to resemble what I think is his vision, as the turnover from the Jack Z era has become almost complete, it's just the amount of trades is going to go down. And at this point, like, it was frustrating when the Blake Snell rumor came up, which, as far as I can tell, is just a rumor. I don't know that there's any kind of interest on Seattle's end, other than just due diligence checking. But they're not going to trade Jared Kelnick or Julio Rodriguez plus other stuff for Blake Snell. Like, that is trading for the sake of trading. So it was fun to think about, and everyone kind of glommed onto the idea to the point where we had to write an article about it, but it's not going to happen. That's trading for the sake of trading.
Yeah, with Snell, like, I would be okay with the non-Julio or Jared prospects just as a starting point in the conversation. I agree with you, though. There's no reason to trade Julio and Jared, who, like, that's the whole farm system. Like, that is what the Mariners have. And if you give that up for Blake Snell, then this whole thing, the whole, like, advantage that the Mariners have goes out the window if you just punt one of those two for Blake Snell this early in their career. So I feel like, you know, it is fun. Like I said, every sports fan loves a fake trade. It just becomes very tiring after a while. Like, go outside every once in a while and please let me rest is really what I'm saying. I don't want to see all your fake trades all winter.
And, like, what people are willing to give, like, nobody is really interested in Braden Bishop. I'm sorry. As, like, except as, like, appended to a much larger trade. Like, there's not going to be a trade for Braden Bishop and Justin Dunn, unless you are losing money on that trade and some
that,
other
yeah.
I mean,
that to me, that smacks of, like, a mid-season trade, like, in a hypothetical world where Dunn is struggling and the Mariners are somehow still in contention and, like, need one specific piece. Yeah. That's when you'd be like, okay, yeah, maybe we'll do Dunn and Bishop for this, like, middle reliever who's left-handed and we've been struggling against left-handers. Like, that sort of thing, maybe. But not in an off-season.
No, what the Mariners have that they are willing to give up right now is not anything any other team would be interested in, I think, unfortunately. John, I think, kind of looked at our best trade candidate in Kyle Seager, which is also riddled with problems because if Kyle Seager is gone, it's Ty France, your everyday third baseman. I don't love Ty France at third base. I don't love Ty France defensively anywhere on the infield as an everyday player. So, yeah, it's just I'm expecting an offseason that is more free agency signings than it is trades. And even at that, it's going to be quiet. Like, it's a quiet offseason. So go, I don't know, follow what the Mets are doing or, like, laugh at the continued tire fire that is the Phillies, who are becoming the new Mets, or, you know, other things. But if you're looking for, like, sheer entertainment value or, like, dopamine hits out of the Mariners, this is not the offseason for you.
Yeah, a better question actually for next week, if you want to do it, would be which free agent will the Angels sign and then waste their prime for the next 3 years? That I will do extensive research. If someone asks that question, I will give a very detailed answer next week.
I mean, the Angels, if you want to talk about a Blake Snell trade, if they're willing to go give up Joe Adell, I mean, maybe they could give up, like, Jordan Adams and Brandon Marsh and something else to get him. I think that the Angels are a team that would legitimately be considering trying to get Blake Snell because they want to be competitive right now. They do not have time to wait around for a bunch of these pitchers that they have. They have nothing coming down the line in the pipeline. Like, they've got to make some big signings, but they've already laid out a lot of money. So I think that's going to have to come from trade. So, yeah, I think the most interesting teams to watch in the AL West are not going to be the Mariners, not going to be the Astros, Actually, not the A's. I don't see them having a big offseason either. I think the Rangers and the Angels are going to be two teams to watch, because I'm still confused about the direction Texas is going to go. Like, I think they need to do a full rebuild, but I have been hearing that there's some pressure on Daniels because of that big new stadium that they just got to field a fairly competitive team. And then,
which is beautiful, according to my two sources, Joe Buck and John Smoltz, who are getting paid to say that.
Yeah, that is, it is an overgrown tough shed, and it is hideous, but it is expensive. I think the nicest thing you can say about it is it's air-conditioned, so maybe fans will go no matter what, but yeah, I'm really interested. I think that definitely those are two more dynamic teams as far as off-seasons in the AL West.
Yeah. Not the Angels making another short-sighted move. That couldn't be them.
They have to, though, right? Like, this is their trial window. Like, they've got to... They desperately need to import some pitching talent to that team immediately. Like, they should have done it last year. They were worse than the Mariners last year. Worse than us. A team that was ostensibly not trying. Like, to me, this... Anyway, I think it's the last year that we're really going to get to dump on the Angels, because I think they're under some really dire pressure that maybe like DePoto was under in 2016, 2017, but worse, because I think that this could be, well, I mean, whatever, Billy already lost his job, so... Maybe they'll
give... I like what you said, though. The thing you said earlier about, like, the Jerry DePoto trades that sort of got him this reputation were because he wanted to create his own system with guys that he wanted. Now that he has those guys, he's not going to then immediately trade all of them away and start over again.
Right. I think there's a framework for, like, those sort of little trades that, you know, you suggested at the top. If it is, like, you're getting maybe a highly paid veteran back, as well as like a very well regarded young player, because I think something like Dunn and Bishop for, you know, like an Ender Inciarte or like a Yoshi Tsutsugo, if you're going to the Rays, and then getting a very talented nearish to the bigs prospect back, I could see something like that where it's like, okay, we have a lot of young pitchers, we're gonna move one of the, you know, we're gonna move Dunn and get, you know, somewhere some player at the position we don't have a lot at. But I think you guys are right. Like, they're mostly set up. And for the Angels, I think the most sensible one, and I don't love doing it because I like him generally as a player, is signing Masahiro Tanaka, who has been playing his entire MLB career on a partially torn labrum that he never got surgery for. And then finally, suddenly... going to Anaheim and needing surgery.
I personally am excited for the Angels to sign Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, I mean, God. I think that would be...
It's going to happen, right? I mean, he's UCLA guy. Like, they're going to pimp it as a big homecoming or whatever. It's gross, but it's going to happen. Which will really, like, just... That is absolutely the most Angels move, and I will be so pleased when it happens, even though I really don't look forward to facing Trevor Bauer a bunch.
It does feel like he's destined for one of the teams that fucks up in free agency every year. Like the Angels, like the Phillies, who you mentioned earlier. Some team that like feels like they have to just do something without really considering everything else that surrounds it. Like Trevor Bauer in the Philadelphia media market would be a disaster. And I feel like part of me wants to see it, and part of me doesn't want to wish that on the nice people of Philadelphia.
The nice people of Philadelphia. I don't know who you've been talking to. I mean, the morally deserving, maybe, people of Philadelphia, but
the people who have been starved for sports competency. Since, I guess, true.
That is very true. The Eagles, the 76ers are terrible. Yes, Philadelphia sports are, and yet that is also where they draw a source of their strength from. Like, I think if a Philadelphia sports team was actually good, like, half the city would just short out. Like, there would be no power. They would not understand, and it's because all that simmering rage that powers the city would have disappeared. So
Well, stay tuned, folks, and find out which major American city collapses this offseason due to incompetency from their local baseball company. It's going to be fascinating. Thank you to everyone who listened to this episode, which we've dubbed the podcast about nothing, as there was no news, no anything to really guide us. Just the power of your spirit and, I guess, Twitter.com. So thank you to everyone who chimed in.
10-minute discourse about rom-coms.
Oh, yeah. Tell us your favorite rom-com. Once we post these, because we're trying, I would love to see some comments on lookoutlanding.com on the podcast. They usually don't get very many comments. So let us know what your favorite rom-com is, especially if it's a low-key, off-the-beaten-path one. That would be great. John, anything else to say before we depart?
No, we're going to have some stuff coming out this week when this pubs on just a few other ways to, you know, try and go at the off season. And, you know, I know it's been slow, but we're coming up on the Rule 5 draft. We're coming up on the non-tender deadline. Whew. Not the new hotness, sort of the new lukewarmness.
No, but there are going to be some really interesting non-tender candidates out there as teams continue to cry poor. And already heard some really interesting names tossed around. Gary Sanchez in New York.
Yeah.
Steven Matz from the Mets.
It's going to be where we sort of get a sense of, teams are going to have a full sense of, okay, who all is available. And then I think you're going to start to see some movement. And this coming week is also when we're going to get the league and the players are going to get together and decide, so are we going to have a DH in the National League again? Which makes a big difference on how teams are going to spend money.
That is wild that they have not sorted that. Because I know the Pirates are a team that is desperately kind of waiting to hear about that because they have block at first base. And
the Mets, too. Like, they have this owner with, theoretically, a ton of money suddenly, but, like, they have six DHs. They had seven, and now one of them got suspended, so they only have six still. But, like, you know, you got to find somewhere to play all these fools, so.
Yeah, I know there's a lot going on, but, like, we're basically in December now, and the fact that the DH issue has not been settled yet is wild to me.
So, I do think, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to pop off. It's not going to be an NBA free agency kind of exciting stay up, and then suddenly everything
That's
happens.
Not how baseball do. That's never how baseball do.
No. But it is going to start getting a little more interesting, and you should hold some small comfort in that. Things are going to start happening.
Yeah, by next week, 5 Charlie Mortons will have signed.
We're just replicating Charlie Mortons. Like we thought they were solving the coronavirus, and instead they were just figuring out ways to clone Charlie Morton. You get a Charlie Morton, and you get a Charlie Morton.
That's what America needs, is a steadying presence to pitch those late innings in October. That's what we've been missing for this whole year.
I know you're joking, but I don't disagree.
Yeah, Charlie Morton for Biden's secretary of whatever. My new campaign.
Secretary of competence? Secretary of dull competence. I would take any of that, any and all of that.
All right, y'all. This is your secretary of podcasts, Matthew Robertson, signing off. Thank you to John and Kate. Thank you to lookoutlanding.com. Thank you to all of you who listen. Please subscribe.
And send in questions. Thank you.
Send in questions, yeah. And until next time, good friggin' bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Stuck in them 20-somethings. Stuck in them 20-somethings. Good luck on them 20-somethings. Good luck on them 20-somethings. God bless these 20-somethings. God bless, God bless, God bless. Hoping my 20-somethings won't end. Hoping to keep the rest of my friends. Praying the 20-somethings don't kill.